Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have everybody joining us back for part two of our two-part episode with Brian Duff on the prepper community and disaster preparedness. And we're going to go ahead and get on into that episode here in just a sec. We have with us on the call, my co-host Sam Bradley, as well as our weather expert Kyle Nelson, Kevin Reiter from Wilderness Safety Institute, and of course our special guest Brian Duff from Mind4Survival.com. Mind4Survival.com. Check his podcast out on prepping and the mindset behind it. And let's go ahead and get on into this second half of this episode. And, you know, if you haven't picked up the first half of this episode, if you're just getting into the show right here, go back and listen to part one first and then come back and listen to this episode. Anyway, without further ado, let's go ahead and get on into part two of this episode with Brian Duff from mind4survival.com.
Joe, I think you had a question.
Well, not so much a question, but you know, first of all, an amen to Brian for his very thoughtful and reasonable approach to, you know, to preparation and training and awareness and all of those things. We talk about those frequently, and I think that's you know, very much at the core of preparation for everything, you know, disaster, financial problems, life in general, you know. But as I was thinking as well, as he was talking a little bit about, you know, people's thoughts on, you know, the idea behind suturing and the sort of, I don't know, over the top, for lack of a better word, medical procedures that they would take on themselves. You know, I think in many cases, as you talk to those people, you appreciate that they don't think much about the tornado that may occur in the next month or two. To them, it's their thought is toward much more apocalyptic style issues. And I worry, and I actually I'd be really interested in the group's thoughts on that some people use this huge, I hate to keep using the word apocalyptic, but I think it's very descriptive, you know, incident that's coming to justify the fact that I need to do all of this sort of over-the-top, outrageous preparations and stuff. And, you know, stock up 3 years worth of food and all kinds of other stuff for using a nuclear holocaust as a, you know, as a backdrop for that. I think that to me that's it's not that that doesn't have some logic to it, but I think you have to sort of weigh the chances of something like that happening versus the chances of, you know, a tornado going and knocking my house down or Hurricane Katrina or whatever. And so I to me, it's all about sort of perspective and weighing the risk against the amount of energy and time and preparation that you put into your own preparation for how likely you are to need any of the stuff that you're doing or talking about, and just sort of keeping those things in balance, I guess.
And a quick note on that, that would fall into the, what's classified as the extreme prepper, either the people who have the money to buy all these cool toys or the people like on Doomsday Preppers who focus on one, you know, they're preparing for an EMP because by golly, it's going to happen. And they don't think, like we've been talking about, you know, instead of focusing on that, focusing on, hey, you live in Tornado Alley. What are you going to do if you, you know, get nailed by a tornado? What happens then? They're focused on one thing. And that's why, you know, they're taking it to the extreme.
Exactly.
Luckily, the majority of people in the prepping community aren't like that. They're more of the common sense type. They're looking to get training. They're looking to get education because they realize, hey, I don't know like Brian, like you talked about the, I don't know what I don't know. But I know somebody who can help with that. I know where I can go, you know, who can point me in the direction to get good training in first aid or wilderness medicine or whatever, you know, in camping and hiking and that, and being outdoors. So the extreme preppers, I think, are a small minority in the overall community, I'll call it. And back to your thoughts before on the bartering. Bartering is actually very big, but it's not just apples for oranges. A lot of it is on, hey, you're a mechanic. My car's broke down. If you fix my car, you know, I can help you out and do, you know, whatever. I'm a plumber. I can come over and fix your leaky faucet. It's not on things, but on services as well.
Well, and, that's what Joe is saying. Yeah. You naturally do that with your neighbors, so this is just kind of widening it out. But, Kevin, if you would, you used the term EMP a couple times. I don't know that everybody knows what that is. Can you define that?
So an EMP is an electromagnetic pulse. So it's a pulse of electromagnetic energy that basically will fry any electric circuits so they won't work. Discovery Channel actually had an actual demonstration. They turned the car on. They had the radio turned on. And they had, I think it was a cell phone, a watch, and a few other things in the car, and they set off an EMP, and basically the electronics were fried. So anything electronic will not work anymore. It fries the internal components. And you can, it's been discussed for I don't know how long. And to a lesser degree, sometimes they happen. There's the discussion about whether countries are developing EMPs as a weapon. But EMPs can happen by accident, you know, that they have. So that's basically an EMP is an electromagnetic pulse, and it has the potential, depending on how big it is, to knock out electronics for, you know, a short range, a couple feet to, you know, I have no idea what the maximum range would be. But yeah, that's in essence, that's what it is.
Well, Brian alluded earlier to a solar flare. I assume that's the kind of thing he was talking about. And I want to throw that to Kyle from a weather standpoint. I mean, that isn't weather specific, but what do you know about solar flares and how they can affect the grid?
Well, Sam, solar flares, they occur naturally from the sun, and that's just discharges of energy from the sun. And those are, you know, thankfully, mostly benign to us here on Earth because we're protected here, you know, on Earth. But unfortunately, you know, from time to time, you do get some larger releases of that energy from the sun that are directed at Earth. And this is something that it's a known natural hazard that occurs, you know, here on Earth. And it's one of the greatest concerns for the power grid, as you hinted at. And that's because when that energy, you know, reaches down to Earth, it will actually it can cause surges and overload parts of the power grid and potentially cause a catastrophic failure of one or more parts of that system. And so thankfully, we actually with the new GOES 16 satellite that was put up very recently, that was launched very recently, we think of it more on the weather monitoring side, and that's really where it shines very brightly. But it also has a new sensor on it that is designed to actually monitor solar activity as well. And so that will provide us an increased amount of lead time here on Earth. So should a pulse of energy from the sun be directed towards Earth, that can be intercepted, that can be measured, and that can give us here on Earth and the utilities that are affected by it some very quick, not much time to react, but still more. It's better than to have some warning than no warning at all. And on that side as well, lots of us, any amateur radio operators out there, it disrupts, you know, communications, any kind of, you know, so all the way from low frequency to high frequency radios, cell phones and everything else. And so many, many impacts on the electronic infrastructure here on Earth if we were to have one of those larger solar pulses received.
Wow. Brian, your thoughts on that?
That's just some incredible information there. That was awesome.
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
yeah, that's a lot more than I've heard. I think, you know, going as far as the EMPs go, there's some concern out right now that North Korea has developed, like, I don't know what they call them, super EMPs, a large EMP that can actually down a power grid. Basically, it's a nuclear warhead that's detonated in the atmosphere. I don't remember the exact mile. I think it's about 30 miles up. But if you go on to, you know, Google and you Google, like, Operation Starfish and some other where they were testing nukes back in the late 50s and early 60s, you can see some of the, where they talk about some of the evidence of what can happen from these EMPs that hit. And so there's, again, there's speculation that North Korea, and I imagine if North Korea has them, then, you know, ourselves and the Soviet Union, China and others probably have them as well. So it's actual concern out there. But at the same time, I think it's like what Joe was talking about earlier, you know, if you plan on this mega event, which, sure, plan for the worst, but if you don't plan for the tornado and you live out in Kansas or the whatever disaster that's local to your area, you may never make it to the large event should one ever happen, because it's that 10 meter target that's going to take you out. As we used to say, it's going to be the near, you know, the tornado, or the fact that you didn't do something to your house to help prepare your house to, you know, maybe it was a home fire plan for you and your family, whatever. It's focus on those close targets, and those will help get you through should a big event happen or something like that.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And that's pretty much what Joe is saying. But I want to switch it up a little here, Brian, and I can't let you go without hearing some of your adventures. So of all of those places you went and all of those different roles you were in, which one really grabbed you the most and why?
I think out of all of them, obviously, so when I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, all that, there was the violence of the wars were going on and all that. But really, I think the one that grabbed me the most from a medical and preparedness mindset was Africa. I was in South Sudan, which is in Juba, which was the capital of South Sudan. And, you know, you're talking dirt streets, power outages, no medical provision whatsoever. I recall we had a guy that went, he broke his ankle. And it took me about a day and a half to get a medevaced out of the country. And in the meantime, my corporate headquarters was saying, hey, get him into the local hospital and get him taken care of. Well, the problem I had with the local hospital was they just had a case of hemorrhagic fever in there. And I'm like, I'm not taking him there. So we finally got him out. But it's just, you run into all those situations where, you know, you don't have a hospital an hour away. It's your hospital is a plane that's coming in to get you a day or two out. There's all kinds of things, especially coming out of the U.S. that we've never, you know, most people, at least as a paramedic, I'd never heard of. You know, there's Nairobi Eye, which is this bug that crawls on you and it dribbles out acid, and people wake up in the morning. It looks like they fell asleep with a cigarette on them. You know, I was like, I don't know how to deal with this thing. And finally I spoke to somebody. It was simple: baking soda and water, and you throw it on there and have them throw it on there every so often, and it fixes it. I mean, you have the bot flies, it's just incredible the amount of disease and stuff there that can hurt you. So from a medical point of view, it was really interesting and really made me do a lot of research, reach out to other medical professionals, reach out to doctors I know and stuff, and engage with them to find out, hey, what do I do here? Because within a few days of being there, I realized medically, since there was no support network, I was way in over my head being with my level as a paramedic for what I had to deal with. It ended up being great. It was a great, I really expanded my paramedic knowledge and my medical knowledge and all that. But at the same time, it was kind of nerve-wracking too.
Yeah, it's like disaster medicine every day when you're dealing with an environment like that. Oh my God, I can only imagine. So what was it like in the Middle East for you?
The Middle East was interesting. I spent about 2,000 days in Iraq. I had a year, I would go over, work a few years, then go to, say, Afghanistan or Pakistan or whatever and take a break. But it was really, it was interesting. It was, you know, going to a war zone. While I was in the military, you know, that's what you train for and stuff. And then you go off as a civilian. And I remember when I first got to Afghanistan, I'm like, all right, I'm in a war zone. Things are going to be going on over here. You know, you got to watch out and all this stuff. And the first day there, I ran a medical clinic and for contractors. And I walk in, and I had a nurse that was working for me, and she says, "Hey, are you going to salsa night?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? There's a war on over here, salsa night." So they had salsa night, and so it was kind of this weird. I don't know, it took a while to get used to, but again, in Afghanistan medically was interesting because a lot of the contractors, so at the time I worked for KBR, and KBR was hiring construction workers. Well, they weren't always the healthiest of individuals that were coming in. So my first day, the nurse, she tells me, "All right, you know, we got sick call in the morning, so, you know, get ready. We see a lot of patients." And I walk out, and there's 40 patients sitting in the waiting room waiting to come and see us. And I'm like, "Oh my God, what did I get myself into on here in this?" And so luckily there we had the military hospital. Somebody was beyond a little cold or sniffles or whatever. They needed some see a doc. I can refer them pretty quick to a doc. But it was really interesting. You run into everything from the war to watching U.S. diplomacy in action to it's just a gamut, kind of like the Wild West, I guess.
Oh, at least. So if you had a choice right now of anywhere in the world you would go to do your disaster medicine, where would you go?
I think I would go back to Africa. Again, you hit on the head when you said that sounds like it's a really kind of disaster medicine all the time. And it really is. You know, the war zone is different. You have people there that are actively trying to cause harm to people. And you get that in Africa, but not as much, as Africa just has a lot of stuff that will hurt you and make you sick. So it's from a medical point of view, it really provides a broad spectrum of opportunity to learn and to be challenged.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. You're challenging yourself as a medic and a person, just dealing with all the strange spitting acid bugs and things you wouldn't see over here. What do you think, Joe? Mm-hmm. Box flies, yeah. What do you think, Joe? You want to go to Africa?
Oh, I'd love to go, but I'd need to do a little studying before I went to be prepared for all of those different things that you know are pretty foreign to most of us that have you know not traveled to Africa. But you know, I mean, I think it's the same thing from a disaster response standpoint. You know, if you're going to India or the Philippines or whatever for a disaster response, part of that response is, you know, being prepared for the indigenous flora and fauna that you're likely to come across and, you know, preparing yourself to deal with being bit or exposed to or whatever. It's just part of the preparation of disaster response.
Well, that's kind of my next question. Yeah, you got to have a Foley catheter. But on that note,
I'll bring a second one. You never know.
Three or four. How do you prepare yourself medically? I mean, how do you prepare yourself for those things in Africa, say, that your body would not be expecting, or certainly strange bugs and tsetse flies and whatever else, bot flies, whatever else is over there?
Well, I mean, the big thing I think I had to worry about over there was malaria, which I went over, I was taking doxycycline, and I worked with a lot of South Africans. A lot of people have been in Africa for years, and they all told me, "Hey, you're still going to get malaria." And I was like, "Nah, you're crazy." So I would take my doxy religiously because I didn't want malaria. And I ended up getting malaria twice while I was over there and finally just gave up on the doxy. I'm like, this isn't working. So maybe it was just, I don't know, maybe the doxy I had was bad or what the case may be. But it was that. It was trying to find other things to do because you're kind of on your own over there a little bit. So that's where I would do studies on at school. And then again, I would get on the internet and constantly researching, medical issues that were going on, things that I was seeing, or just, hey, what medical problems are in Africa and how do you recognize it? Cause at first, again, with the bug, the Nairobi eye that was dribbling acid on people, I didn't even know what I was looking at when I saw it. So trying to just to be able to identify it so you can know where to go and look up the proper information to actually try to help people.
Joe, a question on that. Malaria never really goes away, does it? It can actually come back years later and wreak havoc on you?
Well, you can be reinfected multiple times, and that's certainly not uncommon to, you know, to have the infection flare back up again.
Ugh, nasty. So final questions, Jamie, anything?
No, I just think this has been an action-packed and full of information episode. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the response is from our community about this. Brian, thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to share all this stuff with us. It's really, I think, been highly informative and opened my eyes and hopefully everybody else's eyes a little bit to have a little bit different outlook on what it means to be a prepper.
Thank you, Jamie. No, this has been an honor and privilege to be on here with you guys. And it's neat to hear what you all have to say and your viewpoints on it. And actually being a longtime medic, it's great to actually get in with some other medical personnel and have a conversation again. I kind of miss that.
Well, Jamie, I told Jamie I'd only close the podcast if he promised to have you back, and he readily agreed. So we're going to do that. I'm sure we have any number of subjects that we can discuss that we'd love to have you on for. And Kevin, thanks for bringing him to us.
Hey, anytime. That's what I'm here for.
And of course, you know, the thread is always training, and that's basically what we're talking about. We, like I said, just about every episode, training as a part of preparedness is it's always there. It's ever present in whatever form it may be. Right, Jamie?
Absolutely. And you know, we talk about it here all the time, and we're thankful for Paragon Medical Education Group and Joe Holly and the rest of the team there to come here and support the podcast so we can bring this out to you every week. And Joe, you know, I think about all the training, you know, opportunities that and all the various things that you all cover. You know, is there a topic or a type of disaster that you all can't put together a training program for?
No, I don't think so. You know, Brian brought up some really interesting new ideas here, and that is we'll have to start incorporating some interesting bugs and that sort of stuff into some of our scenarios to really, really challenge folks. So thanks, Brian. Those are great.
Yeah, glad I can help.
So if somebody wants to bring Paragon into their system, to their jurisdiction or their business to help train people to make them better prepared for where they're deploying or an event coming up in their community that they might foresee, where can they reach out to you?
Well, they can find us on the web at ParagonMedicalEducationGroup.com. We have a Twitter feed and a Facebook page, Paragon Medical Group as well. They can also reach us through the Disaster Podcast.
Excellent. And thanks again for all of your support. We really appreciate it. So, Brian, why don't you give us some idea where we can reach out to you? I know survivalistprepper.net. Is that correct?
So that's Dale Goodwin's website. It's a great website. He has a great podcast. I highly recommend it to everybody. My podcast is mind4survival.com. That's mind, the number four, survival.com. Go on there. And if anybody has any questions, feel free. You can email me through the site or anything, and I'll be happy to respond.
Awesome. And if you do me a favor after we get done here, email me the link that you want me to use and specifically, and I'll be happy to put that in there.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks a lot for coming on. Kevin, where can folks find you?
They can find me in the usual place. Go to wildsafety.com, and there's all my social media and contact info, and of course, the Disaster Podcast website and Facebook group.
And I was checking out your site recently, and I know you got some wilderness training things coming up in the San Antonio area. Is that correct?
That's correct. I have training scheduled out through, I believe, November, and I'm actually putting together a private group out in Colorado with Dale's group of folks, and basically anywhere in the country, if you can get a group together, I'll come out and do that.
Fantastic. Well, I highly recommend
people
making use of Kevin's services, and he's very knowledgeable, and I'm sure that they will be happy to have available the wilderness training you provide. So, Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. So feel free to add me, connect with me on LinkedIn, however you want to connect. And let's continue the conversation and always follow along on all my latest summer adventures, whether I'm climbing a radio tower, ziplining on a cable, or teaching a natural hazards class.
Cool. And it's always great to have you on with your weather outlook for the week when we have a recent episode. So thanks so much for that. Sam, you know, it's been a great episode. This is going to be turning into a double episode here. So folks will be listening to this and have already listened, hopefully, to episode one. If you haven't, please go back and find episode one so you can hear the first half of this podcast. But Sam, you know, people are looking for both you and I. Where can they find you? Oh, are you muted, Sam?
I'm mute, Sam. I'm mute.
Actually, I don't know. Maybe Sam.
I did a Joe Holly here. Okay. Talking about myself. Oh, well, that's conversation sometimes. No, usual social media places, Sam Bradley, Sad Bradley, and Lemon. No offense, Joe. The DisasterPodcast.com website. We'd love to hear your reaction to this discussion. I think it was pretty awesome. And Brian, we need to get you hooked up on our Facebook discussion page. We got how many? 400 people on there now, Jamie, or something like that?
Close to 500 now. So.
Yeah, a whole bunch. So that'd be another opportunity for them to ask you some questions, of which I assume there should be many. But, yeah, it's crazy. My attention's a little diverted because as we speak, I am subscribing to Mindforce Survival so I can listen to that on the way to California tomorrow.
Cool.
Go ahead, Jerry.
No, I was going to say folks can find me over at under the handle PodMedic in most social media channels out there. And, of course, always look me up on our Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast and ask to join the Facebook group, and we'll let you in. And we always post episodes there as well as have comments on the episodes. So you can share in with the rest of the community or post a question or a comment to any of our frequent guests. And we'd love to reach out and have a conversation. So. Looking forward to that. But good episode, Sam. Glad we got Brian on and had everybody come on the show this week.
Yes, absolutely. And we definitely will have him back. Good stuff. And believe it or not, it's a topic we hadn't talked about before. But, you know, every time we think we might run out of stuff, we always find something else. But, you know, it all has the same message behind it, that disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.